All right, so today we're going to continue beginning with text number 4. Which reads, of all kinds of wealth, education is peerless, as it cannot be stolen, it is priceless and imperishable. So now here the author explains that vidya, vidya is the most priceless thing, the most valuable thing, and it gives three reasons why that knowledge is considered to be the most valuable thing. So first, no one can steal it from you. Once you have knowledge, it cannot be stolen. Actually, there's another story. There was two brothers who had grown up together in their village, and when they reached maturity, then they decided to go leave their village and seek their fortune. So they both went to, from a small Indian village, they went to the big city, so-called big city. And so there, when the two brothers got there, they thought, well, now what are you going to do? So one of the brothers was inclined towards business. So he sought out some wealthy merchants and thought, well, I'll serve them. And the other brother, the younger one, he was more inclined towards study. So he sought out some brahmanas. And then he began to serve them and learn from them. So some years passed like this, both of them applying themselves in their individual ways. And of course, the older brother who was inclined towards business, he served very diligently the businessmen, the Vaishya community. And he also learned many tricks and how to make money. And he became successful. And he started amassing wealth. And the younger brother, he served his Brahmana teachers very nicely, and he became very learned. So after some years passed, and they decided to go and visit their family, their parents, return to their village. So on the way, so they thought, well, the older one said, I'm going to take some wealth to give to my mother and my father. Of course, in the Vedic culture, the mother is considered the first guru, and the father the second guru. So and of course, children are trained to respect their parents in that way. And so naturally, the elder brother, he wanted to take some of the wealth that he had acquired and give it, present it at the feet of his parents. And the younger one, of course, he lived as a brahmachari, as a pauper, as a student, means with in poverty, but served the brahmanas and learned a great deal of Sanskrit and all the different angas of study of the Vedas. So as they were going back, then the elder brother was carrying some wealth with him, and they were approaching their village. And then, of course, some dacoits stopped them and took all the money from the elder brother. And as they were searching through the younger brother's belongings, he had a few books that they left him. So when they got to the village, it struck very hard on the mind of the elder brother. He said that actually I worked all those years to get money to give to my family, and it was all taken away. Now I have actually nothing to show for all my labor. I have nothing to show for it. I can't offer anything to my family. And the younger brother was completely unaffected because he had knowledge. He had gained knowledge. So of course that's a much more valuable thing. And materialistic thieves, they don't value it. And so there's no danger of losing it. And when you have knowledge, then of course you have the ability on how to gain wealth if you want to apply your intelligence that way. I didn't get your name, Mataji. Vedavati. So this is just, of course, a very simple illustration of how accumulation of knowledge is much more valuable. Because it cannot be taken away, it cannot be lost so easily as wealth can. So, therefore, Narayan Pandit is... this whole first section of the Hitopadesha is to do exactly this. It's to, first of all, convince the students that acquiring knowledge is a very valuable thing. And why it's valuable, first, he says, because it cannot be stolen. Now, second, he says... The second reason is that it is priceless, A man may be rich, but there is a limit to his wealth. He may have $1 million, he may have $1 trillion, he may have $1 billion, but in any case, it's limited. But knowledge or vidya cannot be limited by such values. No one can say he knows this much and it is worth that amount. Furthermore, one can earn any amount of wealth with knowledge. Actually, consultants in different fields earn millions of dollars with their knowledge. And their knowledge stays intact. Even as they do consulting, their knowledge actually increases. That knowledge is priceless and cannot be purchased with money like other commodities. Now, the third reason the author gives that knowledge is the most valuable object is that it is imperishable. One can spend his wealth or distribute it in charity and it diminishes, but knowledge, when distributed, does not diminish, right? Now, I think all of us have experienced that in our preaching. When you go out in the preaching field, or those of you who are teaching in Gurukul or have experience in training devotees, especially with spiritual knowledge, the more you give it, the more you communicate it, the more clear it comes in your mind, and the more you realize it. And so this is the third reason why knowledge is considered more valuable, because it does not diminish. So most people, even though they have money, we see quite frequently. I think devotees who have actually done any collecting, they'll verify that people who are very wealthy, it's harder to get them to donate so often than people who are not so wealthy. If people are, I've seen practically that people who are modest in their wealth, there actually seemed it is easier for them to give in charity. Of course, they cannot give so much, but they're more willing to give. At least it appears this way. Even when you have wealth, you get attached to it, and it's difficult to separate yourself from it to actually give it away. But not so with knowledge. The more one teaches, the more learned he becomes. This is especially true with spiritual knowledge, as we were discussing. A man with vidya can distribute his wealth to hundreds of people and still remain wealthy. Of course, that wealth means having the understanding. And when death calls, one cannot take his wealth with him, unless, of course, that wealth is spiritual knowledge. Spiritual knowledge can be carried at the time of death to the next body. So in this way, learning is superior to any other kind of wealth. So now there's another story to illustrate this. There was once a king who was very much attached to his wealth and opulence. He had, of course, so much land and underlings, rather subjects. And so consequently, when one actually is very proud of his material opulence, of his wealth, then he becomes puffed up. Or he starts to think of himself as a big controller. So one day, a saint visited the king. And of course the king, you know, the saint was of course a brahmana, and he invited the brahmana in, and he offered him a seat, offered him traditionally some fruits, something to eat, some charity, some cloth, and like this then began inquiring from that saint. So then the saint, all of a sudden they were speaking, exchanging, by the way, when you study Srimad Bhagavatam and other Vedic literatures, you'll see when just like in the case of Chitraketu Maharaj, when he received Narada Muni and Angira into his palace, he inquired about their spiritual well-being. In other words, if you're speaking to a brahmana, then the proper greeting is not, hey, how you doing, how's your health? That's not the way you should greet a brahmana. When you're speaking to a brahmana, you should greet him by saying, my dear sir, or my dear Prabhu, how are you progressing? How is your sadhana? How are you progressing and getting out of the cycle of birth and death? Are your studies going well? Are you concentrating nicely on your japa? Are you meditating nicely on the deity? Is your deity worship going nicely? This is the proper way to actually greet a brahmana. And if you greet a king, just like in the Srimad Bhagavatam, when Angira and Narada came to Chitraketu, they said, my dear king, how is the army? Is the army strong and prepared? How is your treasury? Is it full? Are all your subjects being taken care of? So this is the proper way to address and greet a kshatriya, And then to Abhisha, what do you say? How's business? Right? You say, how's business? Everything okay? You're making a lot of profit? Oh, good. And then to a sudra, you say, what?
How are you?
How are you? How's your health? Everything okay? You know, your belly full? Teeth, are your teeth strong? So because he's mostly interested in just the bodily necessities. So when this king, he received this brahmana, he also spoke to him. And they made their exchanges. And then all of a sudden, the brahmana became very serious, very grave. And the king asked him, why, did I make some offense? All of a sudden, we were talking and now you've become very grave. So what is the meaning of this gravity? And so the saint then said to him, well, my dear king, I can understand that in just 3 days you're going to die. This is a similar story to the other one. So the king thought, well, this is not good news. But then the sage said, well, actually, that's the bad news. The bad news is in 3 days you're going to die, but the good news is you're a pious king, so you're going to attain the heavenly planets. You're going to go to Swargalok. You're going to go to a very heavenly place, and there you're going to enjoy like anything. You're going to have a big palace. You're going to have many followers. You're going to have much sense enjoyment. Beautiful gardens are there. You'll enjoy with celestial women. So there's only one thing that is going to cause disturbance to you in heaven, and that is that in the mansion, the celestial mansion that you'll be given to reside in, there'll be some mosquitoes, and they'll bite you. And even though you have a very nice mosquito net, that still there'll be one hole in that mosquito net, and through that hole they'll go inside and bite you. That will be the only misery that you experience there. So the king thought, well, that's all right. You know, if that's all, I'm not worried. You know, I'll just mend that net. I'll just mend it. I'll just get a needle and sew it all up, and then there's no misery for me there. So then the saint said, well, that's all right, but in heaven, there's no needles. There's no needles there. So you'll be sure to take one with you when you go. So then the king said, what is this? You can't take a needle with you from here to when you leave your body. You can't take a needle with you. So then he said, so if you can't even take a needle with you when you leave, then what is the worth of all your kingdom? Why do you consider this kingdom? You're so proud of your kingdom, but you can't take it with you. You can't even take one needle out of your kingdom with you when you leave this body. So then why are you so proud of this? Why are you so proud of your material possession? And of course, the king obviously realized that no matter what kind of material wealth you hold, it actually has only temporary value. Whereas if one has actually gained spiritual knowledge, if one has actually gained knowledge, then that he can take with him. And we see, even in our society, some devotees come who have a very easy for them to grasp Krishna conscious philosophy. In Srimad Bhagavad Gita, in the second chapter, it's explained that some see the soul as amazing, some hear of him as amazing, some hear of him as amazing, some describe him as amazing, and some they cannot understand him at all. So this illustrates how people have different, they're on different levels of understanding, even in this birth. So I've seen sometimes people come to Krishna consciousness movement, to our movement, and they have a very difficult time grasping the philosophy, while others who come and say a new bhakta, sometimes I've met new bhaktas that have a better understanding of the philosophy than devotees who have been in our society for 10, 12 years. That's because why? Why is that? Because in their previous life, when they left their body, they had accumulated a certain amount of knowledge and have a certain amount of realization, and that they bring with them into this new body. Even though in this life they have not practiced Krishna consciousness, still they have an understanding of the philosophy and a realization of the philosophy, and they are less attached to the material things of this world. So this is some we can see practically how then, however much spiritual understanding we achieve in this life, then when we leave this body, that realization we take with us. And of course, that realization, understanding, that will help us in our next life. Automatically, as explained in 6th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, that one will automatically be attracted to the principles of yoga. He will probably take birth in the family of transcendentalists or family of devotees, like your daughter. She's naturally, I remember your daughter being very naturally, as we rode that time, we saw that she was actually had a very natural inclination towards spiritual ideas and thoughts. So children who are often born in the family of devotees, and we see they have a natural tendency towards these things. And it's because in the past life, they've accumulated enough spiritual knowledge. So now, in contrast to accumulation of spiritual knowledge, if one accumulates material knowledge, of course, that he will lose at the time of death as well. Spiritual knowledge can be carried at the time of death and continues even in the next life. Sometimes family wealth is divided among members, but one cannot claim a share of another's knowledge. Therefore, among all types of wealth, knowledge is the best. Now, Sukracharya also, as we know from the eighth canto, isn't it, where Bali? Eighth canto is the story of Bali Maharaj and Vamana. And if you remember, Bali approached Sukracharya and to ask him advice. He said, actually, I made a promise to this dwarf Brahmana who came here. And now Sukracharya came and said, yeah, you promised to give him charity. And then Sukracharya started giving him instructions on how to back out of it. Actually, Sukracharya has written a book on niti. And as we saw, he was using, he tried to use his niti to convince Bali to not give charity to Vamana. And he spoke one verse, I can't remember exactly, but he said, he was telling him that in certain, you remember Mataji? He said, there are certain situations where you can lie. He said, like, especially in something concerning a marriage ceremony, lies can be told without incurring sinful activity. And also, to save your own life, a lie can be told without incurring sin. And there's certain, he started speaking one verse and telling all the different situations where you can actually lie and get away with it, so to speak. So, of course, this was one of the verses that comes in his compilation of verses on niti. Now, it's not that because that, of course, Bali did not accept, because he understood this Vamana, this dwarf, he is actually the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and I want to give to him, and it's actually beneficial to give to him. So he neglected that instruction of Sukracharya. But here, in other words, it doesn't mean that everything Sukracharya said is not valid. But so here is a verse also from Sukracharya Niti, where he explains here a very valid point. He says, vidya, or knowledge, is superior to wealth because with it one can earn all other wealths. It increases when given in charity. It is not burdensome to carry, and no one can take it away forcibly. So here are some other reasons why knowledge is a more valuable wealth, a superior wealth, to any other type of thing. Yes,
I can think of an example where knowledge can be lost. It's given in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. There's an analogy of a Brahmin who doesn't disperse or doesn't distribute his knowledge. He's compared to a cracked vessel. Put a corner there, has a crack and drops water. So he loses knowledge if he doesn't distribute.
Very good point. Very good point. So it means what? That's why we are a preaching mission. That's why our understanding is that whatever knowledge you get, you must distribute it. You must teach it. And that way it increases. And if you just accumulate it and you don't teach it, then you're actually somewhat of a miser. You're actually just accumulating it for yourself. And one's brahminical power diminishes if he doesn't distribute that, if he doesn't teach. A Brahmana must engage in six activities, or not must, but he's allowed to engage in six activities. Patan, patan, yajan, yajan, dana, pratigraha. He must He must learn, rather he must perform deity worship, and he must teach deity worship. It means whatever he knows about worship, he must teach. And he must perform sacrifice, and he must teach others to perform sacrifice. And then he can give in charity and receive charity. And it's said that of those six activities a Brahmana can perform, three are compulsory. And the compulsory ones are the giving. He must give knowledge, he must give charity, he must teach how to worship the deity, and he must teach how to perform sacrifice. The other three are optional. The receiving part is optional. You can, you cannot, but you must do the others. And of course, this is how a Brahmana increases in his brahminical power and his knowledge.
But then a Pathana, isn't that the study of Vedic
Buddhism,
teach others to study?
I said deity worship and sacrifice. I'm sorry, you're right. It's study of the Vedas and teaching the Vedas, and then sacrifice can include deity worship and actual yajna. Thank you. I misquoted it. All right, so then we'll go on to text number 5. Now, in the next verse, in this verse, text number 5, Naranpada explains how a person born in a low family can come in contact with rich people if he has a good education. So, text number 5. Just as a river carries a blade of grass downstream to the inaccessible ocean, so knowledge, even if possessed by a common man, can lead one to a king who is generally unapproachable and whose audience brings good fortune. So this is a nice comparison to how a river, a blade of grass has no ability to move by itself, has no legs. It's immovable. It's an immovable object. It's like we have movable objects and immovable objects. So here it's explained that an immovable object or something insignificant can move if it gets the assistance of a movable object. So similarly, a person who is a common man, he can actually attain an inaccessible place rather than that of a big king if he has knowledge. So knowledge is respected everywhere. A king or head of state may be respected in his own country, but a scholar is honored even in foreign lands. Swadeshe pujyate raja. Swadesha means in one's own country. Pujyate, the raja pujyate, is the king is worshipped in his own country. But the vidvan, it's like we have this term bhagavan. Bhag means opulence. Van means one who possesses. So vidvan means one who possesses knowledge. Then vidvan's sarvatra pujyate. Wherever he goes, he is offered worship because of the knowledge he has. So the author says that a common man endowed with knowledge can even meet a king. It is not an easy task to gain the audience of a king, as they generally meet with heads of state or other royalty. Yet they are attracted to a man of knowledge. Now there's a story to illustrate this. This is a true story which took place in Kashmir. There was once a great poet named Sri Harsha, who traveled to Kashmir to have darshan of Mother Saraswati, the goddess of learning, in the temple. While there, he decided to try to meet the king of Kashmir, and he approached the palace, but the guard stopped him and said, "You, who are you?" And he said, "Well, I'm a poet, and I've come to meet the king." He said, "Anyway, you know, we're not much interested in poetry here, so you can just go back." So Sri Harsha then accepted. He's actually a famous poet in other parts of India, but he didn't try to establish his credentials. He just left. And then one evening, he went to the river and he was performing his Gayatri. And nearby were two women who were washing their clothes in the river. They were washing their family clothes in the river. So while he was there, he chanted his Gayatri and he was just sitting silently. Then these women started to argue. Sometimes, it's on very rare occasions, not very often that women argue, but sometimes they do. So they started arguing, and then one started slapping the other. And first they started screaming at each other, and then they started pulling hair and scratching and biting. And then other family members came there, and they tried to separate them, and before long, all the members of both sides of the family were having like a general melee there. They were just having like a riot. A big fight was there going on. So then this incident was reported to the king, and everybody involved had to go and report to the court and so that the dispute could be settled. So when they got there, the king heard one side's testimony, and then he patiently heard the other side's testimony, and still they were conflicting accounts, and he could not accurately decide who was at fault. And so he asked them, well, was there anyone else there who might have witnessed this thing? Was there a third party present? And the woman said, yeah, there was one Brahmin sitting there chanting Gayatri, and he witnessed the whole thing, although he didn't get involved. So they said, okay, you go and find that Brahmin and bring him in here. So then they brought the Sriharsha, and he came in. And of course, he was from another part of India. So the king said, my dear Brahmana, what did you see when this incident happened at the river? And he said, well, I saw these two women talking, but I don't know their language. He said, I'm not from this part of the country, so they're speaking in a local language, and I could not understand what they're saying, but I can repeat everything they said. And the king was amazed. Because what does that mean? What is that called when a person can remember everything he hears? Srutidhara. So the king said, what? So he says, yeah, I'll tell you. This one, she said this. And then he started repeating everything she said. And then he said, the other one, she said this. And then the other one retaliated like this. And like that, he narrated, he just by memory told the whole incident. So the king was amazed and said, my dear Brahmana, who are you? And so he says, well, I'm Sriharsha. So then, of course, the king gave him a royal welcome. So this simple story just illustrates how he was apparently, at least according to the guards, and in that place, he was away from his home. He was in a place where he was not known, but still, because he was a learned man, then he received honor, and he also got the audience of a king, and in this way benefited. So this is again just some incidents which hopefully will inspire us to try to acquire, especially transcendental knowledge. Even in our society, practically we've seen so often that devotees who we may not have, some devotees may not have some very high academic credentials, they may not have degrees from college or some aristocratic upbringing, but because they have knowledge of Bhagavad Gita, then they very often go and preach to very wealthy, influential people. Just like I know Mother Narayani in Calcutta, or many devotees who are in preaching in big cities, they often get the opportunity even to convince people to take up spiritual life, and actually they become, in fact, you know, Siksha Gurus of very wealthy people, academic qualifications. So, therefore, we should apply ourselves fully to developing a very good understanding of Krishna conscious philosophy, and that will carry us. We may be common men, we may be ordinary people, but if we acquire transcendental knowledge, especially of Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, if we acquire knowledge of these scriptures, then this knowledge will carry us, like a river will carry a blade of grass, this knowledge will carry us to meet very important people who we can influence to do good for the rest of the society. So here it's explained. You have another comment?
No.
Any comments? All right. So if one acquires spiritual knowledge, he can contact the greatest person. Of course, and the greatest person is Lord Krishna, Lord Krishna says that one who can understand his transcendental birth and activities attains him. He also says that a man of transcendental knowledge is his very self, jnani matam. Pebbles and straw have no ability to reach the ocean, but if carried by a river, they can do so. The word samudram, ocean, literally means that which is full of gems. So it means that by the mercy of the river, worthless pebbles can contact valuable gems. Similarly, the insignificant living entity is not capable to reach the ocean of Krishna, but if he is carried by the river of spiritual knowledge, he can do so. This is the unique quality of human birth. It offers the ability to get knowledge. So the next question that may come in one's mind is how? How can knowledge give us happiness? Materialistic persons say that happiness comes from sense enjoyment. So the next verse responds to this question, which is text number 6, which reads, education makes one modest, and thus one becomes qualified. Being qualified, one attains wealth, with which he can perform religious acts, such as giving charity and performing sacrifices, which lead to happiness. We know from the third chapter of Bhagavad Gita that if one performs sacrifice, then all necessities that it required will be supplied to him. So the first characteristic of proper education is that one becomes modest. In other words, if one who actually is learned, he will be modest, he will be mild, he will be well-mannered. Just like Janmasthapur was saying on the first day, that if one is educated, the proof that he's educated is that he's well-behaved. If one is ill-behaved, if one has poor conduct, then the fact is, he may have so many degrees, he may have straight A's in school, but he has not educated himself. The proof of education is that he's well-behaved. Actually, education is, or rather the symptoms of a learned man are described later on as being three. I won't go into detail, but because we'll discuss that verse later on, but one verse that Srila Prabhupada very often quoted, in fact, of all these, you know, I was reading Sanskrit Maharaj's book, and there Maharaj said that of all the quotes that Srila Prabhupada took from Hitopadesh and from Chanakya, the one he quoted the most was this one I'm referring to, Matrivat Paradarishu Paradravyashu Lostravat, which means that the sign of a educated man or of a learned pandit is that he sees all women as mother, other than his wife. Every woman who's not his wife he sees and respects as mother. That's a sign of an educated man. And that whatever he sees that does not belong to him, he sees that as rubble, or Prabhupada says, a lump of clay or straw in the street, sometimes Srila Prabhupada says. He sees it as something useless. He sees it like refuse. So if we find these cartels, they don't belong to me, so I should never consider possessing them. I should see them just like I would see, not that they have no value, but one would never consider picking up a lump of dirt out of the street, especially in India. So in the same way, if I see something that does not belong to me, even though it has value, the analogy follows as much as we would never think to pick it up because it's just an untouchable thing. So in the same way, something which does not belong to us, we should see as something we should never try to covet, never try to touch. If one sees like that, then he's considered learned. And the other one is Atmavat Sarvabhuteshu, that he sees all living entities, he sees them as his very self, which means the golden rule, which means that one should treat others as he would like himself to be treated. So these are the symptoms of a learned man. So therefore, such a one is very modest, is very mild. Well, of course, he may also be very strong. He may be also be very forceful in certain circumstances. But generally, obviously, there is some element of modesty there. He's not proud. Sometimes people say, well, if you learn too much, if you read too many books, you have to be careful you become proud. But if you actually learn the content of especially spiritual knowledge, if you actually take that knowledge into your heart, then you will not become proud. It will have the opposite effect. It will actually make you modest and humble. It will actually make you realize how insignificant you are compared to, of course, the Almighty Supreme Lord. So if an acquisition of knowledge has made one proud, you can understand that he has not actually understood that knowledge. Means he's acquired it. He may have a good memory, and he may be able to repeat it like a parrot. But if his behavior is not good, then it means that he's simply repeating what he's heard, and he's learned it just so he can, impress people to get some honor or respect in society. So therefore, he's learned it not for the purpose of understanding it. Or he's memorized it not for the purpose of understanding it, but he's acquired it just to use it as a currency to get respect or position or something else in some other mundane thing in society. So therefore, a person who's actually learned it, then it will reflect in his behavior. And in Chaitanya Charitamrita, this is discussed. Lord Chaitanya, when he met Haridas Thakur, he said, there are two things. There's achar and there's prachar. Achar means speech. No. Prachar means speech. Achar means behavior. Yeah. Acharati srestas. Yadyar acharati srestas. Means behavior or conduct. So he said, one who behaves well, even though he may not speak so nicely, he is superior to one who may speak very nicely but does not behave well. And he said to Haridas Thakur, you are the highest because you speak very nicely and you also behave very nicely. So therefore, you are the highest of all men. So, but the point I want to bring out here is that behavior, good behavior, is more important than good speaking. Or as we say in America, there's a saying that says, with action speaks louder than words, which means if you behave properly, you will be heard, or you will be able that will have more effect on others than what you say, especially in Kali Yuga, because in Kali Yuga people will say anything, and according to the 12th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, in Kali Yuga too much importance is given to what people say and not enough to what they do. In other words, too much stress is placed on external things and not enough on the internal things.
That's symptoms of Kali Yuga.
I'm sorry?
Those are symptoms of Kali Yuga.
In the description of Kali Yuga, there's two chapters in the 12th canto which describe symptoms. And one of them is that I don't remember exactly the verse or the exact wording, but something to the effect that one will be given respect, or a scholar will be known just simply by what he says. A scholar will be thought of, one who speaks nicely will be thought of as a great scholar, something like that. So we have about 5 minutes left. We'll continue this tomorrow. We got cut short today because our class began a little bit late. So if there's any comments, we can discuss. Yes? Rukmini Dwarkadish.
Saying about material knowledge.
I'm sorry?
Material knowledge is lost after this life, is not preserved. So I was using the example of, say, very talented musicians. In very birth, they have this knowledge.
Yeah.
Somehow. So I'm using this example for calm or show calm.
No, I so this talent, at least some talent in art or music, of course, we know is carried. Or even, I think, at least I heard that there was a that Srila Prabhupada commented that Ravi Shankar had been a master sitarist for several births or something like that. So apparently, so from that, at least we understand that that talent, now there must be somewhat of a difference between talent and material learning. Or even like, I think it was Mozart, who even at 5 or 6 years old was composing. Is that right, Mother? Yeah. He was composing symphonies at that age. And it's not that he had gone to school and learned music, but that he expressed it, I just hear these things in my mind. I hear these things. And so therefore, when he learned to write music and so forth, then he could record them. But he was born with some talent, some talent from a previous life. But at least more gross types of knowledge then at least are not, we don't find that one carries, well, I don't know, you have some thoughts on this? Because it is a fact that even say artists, even if a mother and father are talented in drawing and painting, their children have the same tendency. Or we had one boy in the school who sings very nicely. And I asked him, I said, who taught you how to sing like that? He led kirtan the other day. He said, nobody. And then I met his father and I said, how does your son know how to sing? No, he's another one. He sings very nicely. There's another boy from Brazil named Vrindavan Chandra. He sings very nicely and I met his father. And he said, yeah, he's always had that talent. He said, but his father's also a good singer. So then, well, I don't understand exactly where to draw the line. But in general, we see that material knowledge, say if you have knowledge of, at least of like business or management or these things, or mathematics even, these things don't necessarily carry over. Whereas some kind of talent may carry over with you. But certainly spiritual knowledge does. Yes, Prabhu?
Spiritual knowledge is beyond time and space. And you can use it in different planets. Mm-hmm. But for example, if someone is a carpenter, you may find difficulty to use it in next planet.
That's a good point. So it could be that, say, someone who's born on this planet with some musical talent, he could have fallen from Gandharva Lok, something like that. He could have come from a planet where everyone has a talent, and consequently manifested superior human abilities in this middle planetary system. But if a carpenter is very pious, and he leaves and goes to a higher planet, he may not require that. That's a very base type of thing that may not be required on higher planets. So therefore it's inferior. Do you have any other thoughts on this, Mataji? Have you were saying in preaching you sometimes say what?
People are sort of explaining the idea of karma or reincarnation. We sometimes always mention one argument, one example that certain personalities, they
exhibit some talent.
It's
a gift that's carried on, it's carried from this. It's like showing who, to show how there is a continuation
from one life.
I see. Well, let me think more if I can. Anyway, in that type of preaching, at least we should be stressing that what is explained in Bhagavad Gita, that whatever progress one makes on the spiritual path, that we know for sure from scripture that it carries that with him. We know from the 6th chapter of Bhagavad Gita that the yoga vrashta, the one who doesn't perfect himself in yoga, Arjuna asked the question, what happens to him? Because he was worried that if I dedicate myself to yoga practice, and fail, then I would have lost. So Krishna explains, no, there's no loss in because whatever progress one makes, then that he takes with him. So we have scriptural evidence that that is the procedure with progress in spiritual life.
A person may take birth as a poet or philosopher, birth after birth, and he's more or less putting it down that he just became attached to the Lord of goodness and happiness. Uh-huh. So he stays in that realm.
He may succeed. He may, even if he has some talent, unless he uses that in Krishna's service, it's just a rope made of silk. Yes. I'm sorry?
So if somebody is taken at the birth because he is not attained perfection,
uh-huh.
But he may have some spiritual knowledge from previous life.
Yes.
But the danger is also there that he may become fallen and degraded.
Yes.
And his knowledge also may somehow be.
Because of bad association, then that may happen. In other words, just like even Srila Prabhupada said one time that. I forget exactly the circumstance. Somebody asked him when devotees came to India. They said they were always thinking that in India everyone is practicing spiritual life or practicing Sanatana Dharma. And so when they came here, they saw cinema billboards and people wearing pants. The Westerners came wearing dhotis and shaved heads, and they saw many Indian people wearing mini skirts and three-piece suits. So they posed the question to Srila Prabhupada, how do we understand this? We thought that everyone in India was advanced. He said, well, they may be advanced. In other words, because they took birth in India, then obviously that is a symptom of very high birth. But they're here, and they're directing themselves this way. Whereas some who took birth in the West, they took birth in a low place, but they're directing themselves this way. So they're heading in different directions. So it's a fact that if one, even sometimes we see that if a person even takes birth in a good family of spiritualists or yogis, due to bad association, it's not that the knowledge is covered or forgotten, it's not that the knowledge is lost, but because of bad association, then he doesn't put it to use. And then like Ajamil, had knowledge, and then he just became degraded, but at later on, when he was faced with a great calamity, it came back to him, and thus, when he heard the Yamadutas and the Vishnudutas discussing, he came to his senses and went to Haridwar and lived in a Vishnu temple and perfected himself. Had he been actually a low class sinful man, he would not have been able to transform himself so easily, but because he had knowledge, actually. His sinful life was the abnormal part of his practice. So we better stop there. So I'm happy that we're having some discussion that makes it more interesting. So I want to encourage more so that we can extract as much understanding out of these verses. So thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.